Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on your time zone, and welcome to today's webinar, Shared Responsibility, Understanding the Role of Your Recycler in Your Disposition Plan. My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer technical support to our speakers. Today, we're welcoming not only a few members of the Perry Johnson team to the session, but Daryl Kendall of Rios as well. We'll be introducing Daryl and the others to you momentarily. First up, I'm going to introduce our speaker from PJRFSI today, and that's Chris Reno. Chris joined the FSI team in 2021 with 20 years of experience in the food, beverage, and hospitality industries. He's based out of Fayetteville, Arkansas, and holds a bachelor degree from the University of Arkansas. He's also a board member of the Arkansas Association of Food Protection and a committee member for the Standards Council of Canada. Chris is here today to help tie in the importance of recycling and disposition plans to the food safety industry and to answer any food safety related questions you might have today. Chris, thanks and welcome to the webinar.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much, Amy, for having me. I'm really excited about today's topic. I think this is definitely something that we're seeing, you know, hot button in the industry these days. And so thank you, Daryl, for taking the time today. And I'm really looking forward to the content and seeing what kind of questions we get from the audience.
Great, thank you. Next up, we have Austin Matthews. Austin has been a part of the Perry Johnson Registrars for almost 10 years. She recently moved into the EHS Program Manager role after working as the EHS Assistant Program Manager for 7 years. She's an excellent resource of information on EHS certification and gives a number of great and informative webinars on the different standards offered on a monthly basis. Austin's here today to answer any questions regarding audit and certification details that our audience might have. Austin, thank you for taking the time to join us and welcome to the webinar.
Thanks so much, Amy.
All right, and last but certainly not least, we have our guest speaker of the day, and that is Daryl Fleming Kendall. Daryl is the Executive Director of Rios, the recycling industry's most comprehensive management system, addressing quality, environmental, and health and safety issues. Daryl has served in this role for almost a decade, helping recycling facilities across the globe improve their performance in each of these key areas. In addition to his role with Rios, he's a father of 3 adopted children, a husband, and runs a farm in Northeast Ohio that's focused on sustainable and regenerative agriculture. Daryl, thank you again so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know you're in the post-ISRI cool down here to come and share your knowledge with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And as you mentioned, we just finished up one of the largest ISRI conventions in history, which for those of you on the webinar today that aren't familiar, ISRI is the trade association that is the voice of the recycling industry. We had 5,200 recyclers get together to talk about everything from commodity pricing to sustainability and everything in between. So it was a good time.
Yeah, congratulations on an awesome conference. And thank I'll just you. Let you go ahead and take it away from the beginning of your slides here, Daryl.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to turn my webcam off so I can make sure that I've got as much bandwidth as I can and as good of quality as audio as I can get for you guys. So today we're going to look a little bit at the recycling industry. We're going to talk about selecting your downstream vendors to handle your waste and scrap issues. I know from what I know, what I know about the food safety and cannabis industries and from talking to Chris and the team at PJR, this is a growing issue for your industry and making sure that the material that you're sending downstream to be either recycled or disposed of is being done so in the most environmentally friendly manner. Go ahead to the next slide. So today, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about understanding how to select the best recycling vendor you can, who's going to do the best work they can on your behalf and ensure that you are taken care of and that your material is being handled in the best possible way and that you're protected as a company, as a facility, and as an operation. So we're going to talk a little bit about why it matters to you. We're going to talk a little bit about what you can do to make sure that you have a better sense of what's happening to your material as it's being sent downstream, and develop that trust with your recycling vendors. You'll probably have several, is my guess, and we'll talk a little bit more about that today. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the long-term outlook for the industry and what things look like now and what's happening. And, you know, as I mentioned, fresh off the ISRI convention, we learned a lot about, it's the first one we've had in 3 years, in-person compliments of the pandemic. And I think everybody is sort of, all the industries are sort of feeling that. But it was a really eye-opening opportunity for us to sit down with our, the members of ISRI, the folks that are certified to RIOS, and really understand what's happening in the industry. So relatively fresh news for you, I suppose, as we go through this. So go ahead and move to the next slide. So what is RIOS? RIOS is an integrated quality environment, health and safety management system that was developed by the recycling industry for specifically for recyclers. So if you're, you know, you'll certainly recognize ISO. It's essentially a combination of 14001, the components of 14001, 9001, and ISO 45001, formerly OSAS 18001. And those are obviously the quality environment and health and safety. But it takes out the pieces that are sort of manufacturing centric, right? When you're manufacturing a product, you have to have, you know, a particular spec of material coming in order to create a new product. Whereas a recycling facility, really, whatever ends up in the door, they have to learn how to handle and manage, with some exceptions, right? I mean, we all have limits on what we'll take and what we won't. RIOS is independent. You know, we talked about ISRI quickly, the Recycling Trade Association. ISRI developed RIOS, sort of looked in the mirror and said, how do we really make recycling stronger in the long term? And part of that was to develop a system that recyclers can voluntarily be a part of. And over time, we recognized very quickly that in order for RIOS to have the independence and the ability to make decisions without a sort of conflict of interest, it needed to be independent. And so we have our own board of directors. It's self-funded. We have myself and a membership manager and currently over 180 facilities that are participating in RIOS in some capacity. And really what it is an opportunity for facilities to you know, highlight a different level of professionalism to outside stakeholders. That's not to say that somebody that isn't RIO certified or isn't certified to, you know, the equivalent ISO standard isn't a professional organization. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we go along. But you know, it is an opportunity in the same way that, you know, some of your facilities undoubtedly have a variety of certifications by the nature of your participation here. I would imagine that to be the case. But it sends a signal to anybody you're working, the facilities are working with, that they've taken the time to invest in being as high functioning an organization as they can. And finally, it's a business tool, right? I mean, and this is the thing we've been pushing for the last 10 or 12 years with RIOS, and has really worked on the electronic side. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But it's an opportunity for these facilities to improve their environmental and health and safety compliance. Obviously, health and safety record, when you're talking about recycling facilities, you've got really large equipment. You've got heavy stuff. You've got shredders that, you know, wouldn't change RPMs if a limb went through them. And so, you know, it is a big issue for our industry, the health and safety component. And finally, you know, the quality side of that is all about you, the customer or the supplier who's sending material downstream, who wants to know where that what is being sent is being handled in the way that is promised. So that's really, you know, the RIOS in a nutshell. You know, certainly Perry Johnson Registrars has been an amazing partner in the growth of RIOS and is part of the certification and implementation process. And Austin is very integral in that part of the operation of Perry Johnson. Austin, if you have anything to add, I'd certainly welcome that. But, you know, essentially, RIOS is a signal, you know, if you take one thing away from this, when you talk to your recyclers, if they have RIOS, or they have a combination of those ISO standards that hits on quality, environment, health, and safety, it's a signal that, you know, they've really invested in the partnership with you as a potential supplier. Austin, before we move on, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Absolutely. I agree. It speaks to the level of commitment and involvement within the organization. It's a advertising tool, can create a sense of competitiveness, you know, being able to stand out from your competitors, being able to advertise not only the certification, but also what it represents and that it aligns with your organization's strategic direction and values as a company.
Awesome. Couldn't have said it. You probably characterized it way better than I did in a much shorter amount of time. So we can go on to the next one. Okay. So what are we talking, when we talk about recycling, what are we talking about? So there are sort of two areas we're going to talk about. The first one is commodity scrap, which is ferrous and non-ferrous metals. Think, you know, scrap yard. They'll bring in demo scrap or, you know, crushed cars or whatever, put them through shredders, sort it, send it on down the line to a mill or a foundry that will then process it into a new material. Then obviously paper and plastic recycling, we're all very familiar with that. There's, you know, the residential part of that, which is the blue bin that you toss your stuff into, put it on the curb, and it goes on down the line to what we call a MRF, a material recovery facility, where it gets sorted and then sent further for reprocessing. And then there's post-industrial recycling, which is, you know, if you think of a printing press or, you know, anything like that, that has large volumes of sort of single commodity type stuff that they can put into a roll-off container or a shipping container or whatever and move pretty easily without having to do a lot of sorting. Tire and rubber obviously is a big one. Anytime you get new tires on your car and you pay, you know, Walmart or Costco or whoever to take your old tires, those go to, you know, one of the facilities we're talking about to get handled. And then electronics. And electronics is sort of a different animal because we're talking about, for the most part, materials that have higher value as a reuse opportunity. So, but they contain data, they contain information about your company, about your clients, about whoever. Go back one real quick. As that slide just gave you a sort of look ahead, we'll talk about that in a little more detail in just a second. I do want to talk a little bit more about the commodity scrap here and make sure we cover all this. So this is the type of stuff that if you've got plastics, you know, from, you know, packaging of any of the material that comes into your facilities, if you've got an agricultural plastic in some instances would qualify under this, any of the metal, obviously metal is among the easiest stuff that comes into your facility would qualify as this. And this is the type of stuff that, you know, as you look to your facilities, you're going to have to ask a lot more questions because this part of the industry hasn't quite moved as far down the line in terms of certification as the electronic side. Okay, now we can go ahead. On the electronic side, you know, I mentioned the reuse component, a computer, your phone, tablet, anything that has an electronic function, essentially a circuit board in it, although that I need to be careful because suddenly, you know, that includes cars and everything else. But all of that stuff has higher value as a secondhand device, provided that, you know, it hasn't been in, you know, if your parents are anything like mine, they've got every computer we've ever owned since I was three and I had the original Mac, original Macintosh as my Christmas present, right? It's still sitting in my parents' closet. But for the most part, materials that are going to these facilities are getting the data wiped. They're being handled in a way that, you know, allows for a reuse function, whether that be domestically or internationally. And they, for the most part, these facilities are avoiding, unless they're required to by their customer, they're avoiding scrapping this material because the value is much higher as a reuse, as a device in a reuse market than it is in as commodity scrap in a scrap market. I will use the term IT asset disposition. Many of your companies, whether you know it or not, have a service provider of some variety that handles your IT assets, particularly on the downstream side. So, you know, as you upgrade computers, as you upgrade equipment, if you're not on a bring your own device plan and you supply phones to your employees, you've got somebody that is likely picking up that material, maybe paying you for it, and then moving it down. And these companies really have become a service. And we'll talk about that in a second as well. But electronics, and I want to emphasize this, has its own set of certifications that are driven entirely on brand protection, right? So it's all about data management. It's all about handling fairly expensive commodities and doing it responsibly. There's also a lot of material in computers, devices, TVs that are hazardous, whether it's mercury from you know, flat panel television screens, or, you know, the lead or PCBs or anything like that. And both of these standards, E-Stewards and R2, really have a lot of requirements around handling those appropriately. So it's because of the nature of it, because customers like you, suppliers like you have said, you know what, we're not just going to give our computer that has all of our customer information, that has all of our bank information, that has all of that, because we're not just going to hand that to somebody in a pickup truck who's going to take it down the road to the nearest scrapyard, these two standards have really pushed the industry to grow and develop and have a stronger sense of, you know, process and understand more completely where material goes when they send it downstream. They have to do downstream due diligence, and we'll talk a little bit about, you know, sort of what that looks like for you guys. But it all that stuff has really moved the electronics recycling portion quite a bit farther down the line in terms of growing and developing this management system culture than the rest of the recycling industry, which is a good thing for you. And we'll talk about how you can help us with the rest of the industry here in a minute. Austin, I'm going to put you on the spot. We didn't, in our little pre-planning, I didn't necessarily tell you this was coming. Is there anything you want to add about the electronic standards, about the best practice standards in R2 and E-Stewards?
Well, I think you about covered most of it. Certainly touched on the hazardous nature of some of the components, whether people realize it or not necessarily what is housed within. So that's kind of a knowledge is power type situation. So these webinars that we offer and having the general public learn more about electronics and the standards is very relevant.
Absolutely. And I will say both of those require a sort of foundational management system, both E-Stewards and R2. And Rios can meet the requirement for either of those. So whether a company require, or whether you choose to use an E-Steward certified company or an R2 certified company, it doesn't matter to us from our perspective. They're equally valuable certifications in protecting you. So, all right, next slide. So let's talk about the risks to your business, and this is presumably why most of you are here. And we're talking about the whole recycling side, commodity recycling, as well as electronics recycling. The first one, you know, and I tried to go in order a little bit of sort of what the importance to you may be. Data security is the big one, right? If you're recycling any of your materials that contain data, whether, again, phone, tablets, computers, if you've got a refrigerator that contains data, if you've got a car that contains data, you know, and some of your facilities may have company cars that have that tie into your phones, and so it's got you know, text message data and things like that. Data security is such a huge issue, and it continues to grow. You know, we've all seen, you know, the companies, the big data breaches over the last several years. that cost companies millions, tens of millions of dollars. And that's something that you obviously want to make sure you're protected from. We're going to talk about zero waste to landfill in a little bit, in a little more detail. But one of the key things as you're looking at this is, you know, if you're going down the path of zero waste to landfill and are expecting your recycler to send all of the material that you send to them through a recycling process or a reuse process, you need to make sure that they're doing that, right? I'm not suggesting that they're not, but there are a number of, depending on the material you're sending and the quality and the grade of the material, there are not necessarily markets for everything that you're going to send downstream. And this is particularly true in paper and plastics. And so you need to understand what's happening with the stuff that isn't sort of the high grade stuff and how it's being handled. Because the zero waste to landfill, you know, it's a big project to undertake and to go through the process of making that happen. And it would be really disappointing, certainly, you know, if
Daryl, I think we might have lost you. Can you hear me, Daryl? All right, I'm not sure if Daryl's internet dipped out. Austin, would you be able to speak on any of this material regarding the risks to businesses? Oh, there's Daryl. We got you
did
back.
Did you lose me for a second? I saw my sound check thing changing color, and I didn't want to stop.
We
mass,
did. Nope.
Where did you? Where was I when you lost me? Let's take a peek behind the curtain, and I'll go back to where I was.
I believe you were on the regulation bullet point there.
Yeah, we were actually just finishing up zero waste to landfill, and I think Perfect. The last thing that I heard was it would be really disappointing to go through the undertaking and then find out that, you know, certain materials weren't being handled, you know, the yep. way that you thought they were.
Perfect. Yeah, so that was the end of that. So we'll go on to regulation. And so in talking with the team at PJR, I understand that there are some special regulations around some the way some of the waste and scrap materials have to be handled, and ensuring that particularly where there's regulation around it, ensuring that your recycler is one, aware of that, and two, has the ability to manage that is really just so important. Again, you put a lot of work in this, so you don't want to find out the hard way that somebody on the back end is not doing what they're supposed to. Sustainability goals and reporting. Obviously, the SEC just came out with a whole new set of rules and requirements around ESG and reporting. But there's societal pressures, you know, the corporate mission, just a general sense of doing the right thing. And then finally, brand and reputation management. It's 2022. I mean, you know, I don't think anybody's surprised to hear that no matter what you think you're hiding, right, as a company, somebody knows and they can spread the news very quickly through social media and other platforms. And when there is an issue, you know, the pitchforks and torches never go after the little fish. They always go after the big fish, right? And so it's all about just taking the time to understand your downstreams. And your upstreams as well, but understanding who you're sending material to and ensuring that they're doing the right thing so it doesn't come back to bite you, right? You know, the last thing you want is to find out the material you've been sending to somebody ends up at a Superfund site and now you've got a big problem, right? So it's good business, right? So let's move on to the next slide. All right, so how do we manage this? I've given you the worst case scenarios here, but I want to be very clear. And as I mentioned, you know, I just spent a week with 5,200 of these folks, talking about how the entire industry is improving year over year, in every way, shape, and form. And I, I do genuinely believe and have witnessed that the overwhelming majority of recyclers, regardless of what they're handling, operate their business as effectively as they can, and largely in compliance, and are willing to talk about their operations and where material is going. If you run into a facility where that is not the case, you know, it happens in any industry, but this is where you want to be extra specially diligent in your as you're doing your downstream vendor verification processes and things like that. So general rule is trust but verify. I don't think I'm surprising anyone. This is just generally good business practice at any point in your supply chain, no matter what it is. But you know, one way to verify that, and the most effective way to verify that, is certification. It's not a silver bullet, and I don't think anybody on the Perry Johnson team, certainly I am not going to sit here and attest to the fact that certification is a perfect solution, because bad actors will always exist, right? They can beat the system, but the overwhelming majority of companies that invest in this process are doing so because they want to be better companies. They want to quickly earn the trust of their supply chain, their customers. And so if a facility has ISO 14001, 9001, 45001, or Rios, or R2 and E Stewards, that's a good way to tell that they've really invested in making sure that they're doing the right thing. But you still got to ask questions, right? There are going to be questions that certification can't answer for you, and it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. And you can ask them, where does my material go? They may not give you the specific location because, there's trade secrets like any industry, but they'll be able to tell you by and large what's happening with the material. And if you're not satisfied with the answers, then certainly that's an indication to maybe look at other options as far as vendors go. Another one is procedures for communicating non-conforming material. I can't tell you how many times it happens, and this is particularly of interest to those of you involved in zero waste to landfill. Just because a company takes plastics, right, doesn't mean they take all plastics. And plastics is an easy one to pick on because there are lots of polymers, lots of shapes and sizes and styles. And I think we've all been confused about, whether a clamshell goes into the recycling bin or not. And the same holds true as you get into larger quantities, right? I use the example of agricultural plastics. Some of them are, some of them aren't. But it's important to understand, how are you going to communicate to me if I'm sending you material that doesn't conform? Because if you're doing zero waste landfill and you're sending it down, and they're not telling you, hey, we don't really have a market for this, there may be somebody that does, there maybe isn't. But then, that needs to be communicated. And so these are all questions to be asking of your downstream vendor as you look at waste and scrap recycling. Next. All right, so we talked a lot about sort of this downstream verification, and I just want to give you a sense of where we stand as an industry and where it's going. So sadly, perhaps it's a commentary on my ability to do my job. I don't know. Certification and management system adoption is not ubiquitous, particularly in the commodity recycling space. So ferrous, non-ferrous metals, paper, plastics, tire, and rubber. And part of that is there's not been a huge demand from customers. The expectation by and large has been very low from customers sending material to recyclers. It's been a lot of, hey, just take care of this for me. But there's a lot of, there's a change there. And we've seen it in vendor selection criteria. We've seen it in RFPs where companies are now starting to require it more and more of their recyclers outside of electronics. Within electronics, if you're working with an electronics recycler who's taking your IT assets and they're not certified to anything, I would highly suggest running, not walking, to whoever will listen and changing that vendor immediately, because that is a problem. If they're not certified in 2022, it's a choice, and that should be concerning. There is increasing pressure from the insurance industry. Many of you have probably seen stories of scrapyard fires. There are lithium ion batteries in literally everything these days. And it is next to impossible to get them out, to manage them. And so a lot of what our industry is doing now is fire management. So sort of taking the when, not if approach. And the insurance industry is really pushing for much better risk management, which is coming in the form of management systems. And the other thing is products and packaging are increasingly finding ways to cut cost. And that generally means less expensive, lower grade materials, electronics. We've all seen the meme where the cover of a Radio Shack ad has now been replaced with a single cell phone, right? And all of those all those tools in the past had, valuable metals in them. They had, all sorts of various other, rare earths and things like that. Where our cell phones now don't as much, right? So there's not as much value in them. So your margins are much smaller, even in packaging. We've all seen sort of this move to flexible printed packaging in almost everything, and that's difficult to recycle. So that's another challenge in the industry. We have seen, and this is coming out of the convention, consolidation. There are just fewer small recyclers. It's moved to a more corporate industry. There are a couple real big players, and then there's some sort of medium tier, and the small mom and pop is sort of disappearing in the recycling space as well. And then, I don't think I'm letting a cat out of the bag for anyone. The supply chain is a disaster right now for recycling as well. Getting containers to move material either domestically or internationally for export is incredibly difficult. Trucking is a problem. Getting staff to manage to drive, whether it's a privately owned fleet or even just contracting, just incredibly difficult at the moment. So these are all things that we sort of see in the industry. None of them, right? So most of them are good from your perspective, right? They're all pushing toward stronger, safer, more sustainable, more reliable recyclers, with the exception of the supply chain. And that I included just because it's so important for people to understand that, the good news is what it has done is forced domestic capacity to increase. And so a lot of the plastics we used to export are now staying domestic and being processed here. Which obviously helps for those of you that are recycling any plastics or moving plastics. It does help from that perspective. It's also, there's a better sense of, higher quality handling and things like that if it's being handled domestically, although there are very, very high quality facilities internationally as well that I have seen and been to. So next. All right, so the zero waste to landfill. I know Chris wanted to get into this a little bit more, and so I'm going to ask him to sort of pop off mute, and he and I can talk about that a little bit, and then I think we're headed in the direction of Q&A. So hopefully I created more questions and answers for all of you.
Yeah, perfect. I'm going to jump on camera. Just loving the presentation. Obviously coming from a very, food background, if you will, and working with a lot of food clients, both, massive global clients that do participate in this program, as well as, smaller but very like you said, kind of marketable, and it aligns with their company mission, and they want to follow a lot of these same practices. So, you know, I think one thing that's really interesting about this, and one question that I have that you mentioned a little bit earlier was, you know, if you participate in this program, but your downstream recycler doesn't necessarily tell you, hey, we don't accept this product, or we don't have a market, or, you know, a place where this goes. So this is going into a landfill. Now, I understand if that comes out, the public perception and the brand, you know, reputational risk that comes with that. But does that also, in any way, could that then lead to EPA violations in certain aspects? You know, with a lot of, you know, food and beverage manufacturing companies and, you know, chemicals, some things like that. I'm curious to know what your take is when it also comes to, you know, what's being put in the landfill and any risk to the business from a litigation standpoint, if something's being put in there, you know, that they're not aware of, that they think is being disposed of in one way, but it's just being, you know, pardon the, you know, I guess simplicity, but dumped in the river.
Yep. So your question is a good one. And the answer is, I think it depends, right? So I mentioned Superfund, right? This is a perfect example. Superfund is a perfect example of a situation where there are a lot of companies and organizations that have gotten caught out in a situation where material that they thought was being handled appropriately, whether by a recycler or waste handler, you know, other vendor, whatever, is ending up at what gets labeled a Superfund site. And then the cleanup is basically split among anybody that the EPA can find. And I'm simplifying this. This is not in any way a legal version of this. So it's simple, super simple version. But the EPA basically looks for anything they can find to suggest that you had anything to do with that facility, and whether it was four levels up in the supply chain or you were the one that brought the material onto the facility, onto the site, you're splitting responsibility, right? And that's worst case scenario. I mean, that's the type of thing that puts a company out of business. But, you know, beyond that, unless there are special regulations around a specific material, I would imagine on the cannabis side there's a little bit more of this than perhaps the food safety side.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up, so thanks for jumping in on that.
Sorry to steal your thunder there.
No, please take it away.
I would imagine there are more potential risks there, and that's where it's just so key to have that conversation. Say, hey, this is the material we have, this is the regulation around it. We need to know that you have the ability to, first of all, differentiate this material, both in terms of recognition, but also in handling and disposition, and as you move it downstream. But we also need to know that you're going to do that every time, right? That it can't be, oh yeah, the first five loads, we're going to be really good about this, and then we're going to get lazy about it, right? So this is where having that conversation is really key. And if they say, look, we can't handle it, like, then don't push it, right? Like, well, can you kind of handle it? No, like, just stay. I mean, everybody wants, you know, within the industry, the throughput matters, right? The volume of material is getting processed, but not if it's not being handled properly. And it's in everybody's best interest. And my hunch is that any recycler you talk to that's worth their salt and really is doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're going to tell you straight up, like, look, we don't have the ability to do that. We don't have the space to do it. We don't have the machinery to do it, whatever. They're going to be honest with you about it. So it's worth taking the time to figure out who can do it and who can do it right. Because, you know, you don't want it being mishandled. And, you know, the other thing on zero waste to landfill, I don't know the nuances of the requirements well enough to know whether this would, you know, sort of be an infraction or a non-conformance on the certification. But the other one that we see a lot is the incineration, you know, the consideration of incineration as recycling or alternative daily cover in a landfill being recycling because it's serving a purpose in the landfill, even though it's in a landfill. And so you just want to make sure that those aren't being considered recycling as well. In our mind, when I say our mind, I mean ISRI and Rios and the commercial recycling industry, that really isn't recycling, right? Because it sort of kills the cycle when you burn it or when you bury it. Yes, it's serving a second function, but we want it to serve a third and fourth and fifth function as well. So, you know, just something else to consider there.
Great. Thank you for that. Great answer. Appreciate it.
Any other questions on that one, Chris?
No, you know, when we get to the Q&A in just a second, I do have a few things that I noticed throughout the presentation that, you know, really stood out to me that I have some questions about. So I'm excited to know, Amy, if we've got any questions from the audience, if anything has come in through Daryl's presentation. And I guess if we want to jump ahead to the next slide, I believe we'll get right into it.
It looks like we do have one more for Daryl to cover just before we get to the discussion. Daryl, if you wanted to speak to this.
Yeah, so, you know, the evolution of this industry has been largely internally driven. And so it's not been the fastest evolution ever. And I think, you know, the participants in the industry will tell you it has gotten a lot safer over the last decade, which is a good thing. But we need your help as well, right? You guys have all, and I'm speaking to, you know, those of you that are participating here, you guys have all gone through a certification process. You've all implemented management systems within your facility. You all have done these things. And you know, the steel and aluminum industries went through this evolution in the 70s and 80s. It's highlighted in the book Good to Great with Alcoa and their efforts. And so it's important that as you are putting together RFPs and you're putting together your vendor requirements for handling your scrap and doing your disposition, make sure you include this as a question, right? I would love to see it as a requirement eventually. The industry is not in a place where, you know, certification is widespread enough that we can say, okay, everybody has to be certified. In 5 years, 10 years, we probably will be. But, you know, start asking the questions now and start really pushing the issue, because again, it's important for you. It's as important for you as it is for them. It's good for your community. It's good for, you know, the people that are working in the facilities, and it's good for your brand protection. And again, you know, hold your providers, whether it be commodity scrap or ITAD or whoever, hold them to the requirements that you've got, right? If they say they're going to give you a data destruction certificate on every serial number that goes through their facility that you send, spot check them, right? Make sure those are coming through. But most of all, be a partner, right? You know, it's easy to, you know, It's easy to rule with an iron fist sometimes with customers and suppliers and say, hey, you're not getting our stuff if you don't do this, we're not sending anything to you. But you know, it really helps if you're listening to what they're telling you in terms of acceptable and non-acceptable material. When they say, hey, we used to take this, now we don't, or hey, we didn't take this, now we do. Read that stuff. They're going to send it to you. They're going to say, hey, please don't bring this to our facility, or hey, please do bring this to our facility. And if you read what they're sending, you can be a much better partner. They also, I mean, there are tons of instances where recyclers have put out videos on how to best load your trucks in order to make loading and unloading effective at their facility, or in order to maximize your payment for the material. These guys know what they're doing, and they know how to make it work really well. So listen to them when they talk to you. And most importantly, and this goes back sort of to Chris's point, I see more often when I go to a recycling facility, you know, somebody just has something they want to get rid of, right? And so they toss it into the recycling, the roll off or whatever. they toss it in like it's a dumpster and it gets buried. And it's like, okay, well, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. There it is, right? But depending on what it is and how it's handled, it can be potentially dead. I mean, you know, propane cylinders and things like that, which are not accepted or at a scrapyard, get buried in a trunk in a car and go through an auto shredder. And usually that's not a problem because the shredder handles it, but it can be an ugly scene if material is being snuck in. And it's a lot of times it's just a mistake or not necessarily a mistake, but it's an innocent, like, oh, hey, you know, they'll take it. I know they don't want it, but they'll take it. Just be very careful about doing that. Be a good partner. And that's, you know, sort of where I would leave it is, you know, anytime you're working with the recycling industry or the IT asset dispositions folks, you know, you're going to make more money. You're going to have a better relationship. You're going to be a better company and have better brand protection with your vendors if you are open and have a good dialogue and can ask the questions. And your recyclers are going to appreciate that as well. But like I said, the big one right now is just start asking the question, are you certified? Because it makes a difference. I mean, the data is showing safer facilities. There are fewer environmental issues at facilities that are certified. It's just, it makes a huge difference. So I would ask you just to start making that part of your selection process. And with that, I think that's my last slide and we're gonna go to Q&A.
Indeed we are. Thank you so much, Daryl, and to Austin and Chris for all the input throughout these slides. I'm going to go ahead and move on to our slide here. It does list all of the contact info for each of our speakers. So if you had any specific questions or, you know, maybe you're seeking a quote for a certification, more information on a topic that was mentioned, you can always reach out via email here. I will shout out and mention upcoming webinars we have. We have a, for PGRFSI, an upcoming Canada Gap webinar that's on May 5th at 2 p.m. The title is to be determined, but we're going to have a good discussion on the updates that have happened and just actually went into effect as of April 1st on Canada Gap there. And then for PGR, Austin herself has several webinars coming up that you can see on the PGR website. Under the training tab in the menu, there should be a link to upcoming webinars. But all right, I'm going to go ahead and check out what questions have come in. If you haven't typed them in and you had some clarification maybe or a you know, a theoretical question about a facility, go ahead and type those questions in. We're happy to take as many as we have time for. Let's see. And I know one of our, like I said at the beginning, our most common question is usually, where can I find the slides? Where can I find the recording? The slides will be available for download from the PGR and PGRFSI websites, usually within 24 to 48 hours after the webinar. Our webmaster is on vacation until next Monday, so it may be delayed until he comes back. But I can guarantee you the recording will be posted by tomorrow. So go ahead and look for that if you wanted to share it with someone or if you missed the beginning of the presentation. All right, but going into questions here. We've got one here. Oh, this is a good one. Daryl, is there a, if someone is looking for a RIO certified recycler, you know, service provider, is there a directory available of people who may be able to provide service?
Yeah, so we actually just went through the process of updating our website, moving ourselves into the 21st century with that tool. And if you go there, there's a Find a Recycler page, and it we're still tweaking a couple things on it, but you know, it does have a full list. It will have a much more robust list in terms of your ability to search by commodity and certification, additional certifications beyond RIOs that they may hold, and address and website and all that stuff. But RIOcertification.org.
All right, awesome. So the same domain as on your email address. That's good to know.
Exactly, yep.
All right, perfect. Thank you. All right, this question might, Austin, you might be able to have some input on this, and I know you do a lot of EHS stuff. Can RIOs or other disposal certifications or plans be applied to helping to manage environmental risks such as livestock waste or chemical runoff, fertilizers from fields?
So, going through the process of implementing the requirements of the standard, using RIOS as an example, since it does cover the quality, the environmental, and the health and safety aspects all in one shot, it definitely teaches you or requires you to use some techniques to be able to implement the requirements, to meet the requirements of the standard, to really assess the relevant types of risk for your specific organization, given their scope of activities, the processes, maybe the chemicals, the specific types of equipment. It really requires you to go through that process and take a look at what risks are relevant, how they're mitigated, how significant they are, the possible negative or positive impacts that those processes or risks could yield. So I would say, even if the specific process or material we're talking about isn't strictly relevant to recycling, RIOS and similar standards, they certainly require that same concept that could be applied in a more general sense. I'm not saying RIOS certification is relevant for all industries, but the activity, the concept of considering risk and identifying operational controls to mitigate those risks would be very similar.
Yeah, I would just add, I don't know, maybe I'm strangely, uniquely positioned to talk about this as a farmer.
I was about to say, you might have some perspective on this as well.
Yeah, and lucky for everyone on here, I was handling some of that animal waste yesterday, so it was a joy. Anyway, you know, I think anytime you're talking about disposal of a material, whether it's waste or recycling or whatever, there are always going to be risks, right? Whether it's a runoff risk or a spill risk or a safety during handling risk. And I would just say, you know, RIOS might not be the relevant answer. I would say that ISO, you know, the nice thing about ISO is, you know, it applies to literally everything, right? There's a used car dealership in Maryland that highlights that they're the only used car dealership that's certified to ISO 9001. So it does apply more broadly. And certainly a health and safety standard of any sort is a good thing. An environmental standard of any sort is a good thing. So I would just ask, you know, what sort of in a situation like that, if you're the one handling the material, I would look into, you know, there may be a specific certification for that industry, but I would also look into just an ISO certification to help you, as Austin so eloquently said, manage the risk that is associated with that stuff. You know, all of this, the entire management system process is about understanding your risk and then mitigating it. So, you know, definitely an opportunity there to improve your business, no matter, you know, sort of what material you're handling and whether it's being recycled or sent to waste of some sort.
Absolutely. All right. Question for Chris. This is in your FSI sphere here. Do you see, you know, the potential for a food safety industry specific recycling or downstream accountability standard in the future? I mean, GFSI has their hands on everything. Do you see this becoming a thing as as consumer awareness especially grows, as people realize, you know, hey, what's actually happening to this product downstream? Do you see this coming about in the next, you know, say 10 years or so?
Oh, that's a great question. And, you know, absolutely, Amy, I do. I think similar to what Daryl mentioned earlier in his presentation was a lot of this needs to be driven, you know, by the consumer themselves. What product am I buying and what's happening to it, you know, in the supply chain, both upstream and downstream. So I think with something like this, we're already seeing a lot of major companies that are out there that, you know, you might consider a little bit more forward thinking, that are already implementing a lot of these strategies now and have really good programs in place. I can think of a few that, you know, do participate in things like zero waste landfill and, you know, companies that, you know, have committed to zero plastics and the Ocean Alliance and things like that. So, you know, it's definitely catching on. As far as a standard being written specifically for it through GFSI, I think what we might see first is more of an addendum, you know, something similar to what we see right now in the industry with social accountability. I think it might first come out in a way that allows it to be kind of a plug and play to many of the different GFSI standards. So more of a basic outline of best practices of how to deal with, and it's going to be very encompassing because, you know, like Daryl mentioned with animal waste, you know, there are lots of different hazards when you start talking about food and beverage manufacturing with the different types of chemicals that are used in different disposal techniques. So, you know, there will be legislation coming down the line. How soon that is, I think, really is going to be determined by the push from us as consumers. You know, how much do we want to know about our product, and how much are we willing to push those companies to be more forthcoming and, you know, share that information with us?
Yeah, how many hashtags can we come up with for the issue, right?
That's exactly
seems to be,
right.
Seems to be the basis of things getting moving from a grassroots level. All right, we've got about 3 minutes left in our scheduled time. Chris, I know you had mentioned that you might have another question for Daryl. Did you want to follow up with anything there?
Yeah, I did. Thanks, Amy. So, Daryl, I had a question for you. You know, very early in the slides, when you were talking about, you know, different types of recycling, you know, you did mention the, I want to make sure I'm using the correct terminology, the reuse and recycle, you know, kind of methodology. And I know that at the time we were talking more smaller scale electronics. However, as you know, in the food and beverage industry here in the United States, you know, they're, you know, massive pieces of equipment. If we were to look at the cannabis industry and we start talking about equipment for extraction and things like that, a lot of times that equipment, you know, will be upgraded and might be, you know, recycled, donated, whatever that looks like, and sent to another market, whether that's overseas or, you know, maybe just another state that has different regulations about, you know, the safety measures in place for said equipment. So can you help me understand a little bit, are you seeing any of that in the industry now? And do you see that as something in the future that food manufacturers do need to be more aware of, that, you know, when they are upgrading out of, you know, their piece of equipment for, I'm just going to use, you know, I don't know, poultry manufacturing, since I'm here in Arkansas, of course, right? So when they're getting rid of, you know, this massive piece of equipment, do you see that falling under that same reuse and recycle method as opposed to more of a scrap method?
Yeah, I mean, I would say anything that has a reuse value, right? If somebody else can reuse it and there is an opportunity to sell it as a functional product, your downstream is going to take that opportunity, right? And so they are in some ways marketing companies as well, right? And those things increasingly will have data in them, right? You know, sure. As you automate things, it has data. And so there will be some data sanitization and stuff like that happens. But yeah, I mean, we see it all the time with medical devices. We see it with, copiers, right? They're a perfect example. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if there's an opportunity and it's with what we call above the tech cut line, which is essentially where it's functional as a reuse tool, it can be remarketed as a reuse tool, then yes, there that opportunity is absolutely there.
Yeah, because, you know, my concern with it is, you know, as you know, most food and beverage manufacturing companies out there in the world, right, it's all you know, IP property, right? They everything is very held, you know, close to the vest and all those types of things. So I'm wondering what the true risk looks like if they are recycling some, I know we talked laptops and personal data, but, you know, no. Recycling machinery that can, you know, if it's, they're not using a reputable recycler who is then taking that on and reselling it, you know, if they're somehow at risk for, you know, losing some of that corporate data?
Yeah, well, anytime you've got intellectual property, I mean, there are recyclers all across the country that take a perfectly good brand new prototype car and put it through a shredder and cry as they do it, right? Because that's the customer is saying, like, we can't have this information getting out to anyone. And certainly military scrap is another one, you know, aerospace, all of that stuff. And so it just depends on the equipment and the specific use. If it's proprietary, most of the time the owner is going to find a yard that has the ability to guarantee that it's been, you know, shredded or dismantled to a certain specification, certain size, right? Mm-hmm. And so it just depends on the instance, but both are opportunities depending on end use markets and customer requirements.
Great. Thanks for that, buddy.
Yep.
All right. I haven't seen any other questions come in. So if any of our attendees still on the call had any more questions, or maybe you have a question that's too specific or personal, too many details, you don't want to type it all out in the text box here, I will encourage you again to go ahead and email one of our panelists. If they can't answer the question, I'm sure they can find someone who can answer your question. But with that, I am going to go ahead and wrap things up for today. Thank you again all for attending. And thank you to everyone on our panel, Austin, Chris, Daryl. Thank you all for taking the time to share your knowledge with us and answer all those questions.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks, guys. Have a good
thank
afternoon.
You.
All right. And I'm going to wish our attendees a good rest of their week, and stay safe and stay healthy out there, guys.